street with his grin pulled way down low. Ain't no sound but the sound of his feet. Machine guns ready to go. Are you ready? Are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat? Out of the doorway, the bullets rip to the sound of the beat. Yeah! Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey, I'm gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Welcome to Gleeful, a Glee podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. We are back to discuss the penultimate episode. I had to look that word up because I always wondered what that meant. That's a $3 word. The penultimate episode of Glee Season 1 entitled Funk, which started off with the funkification of New Directions by Vocal Adrenaline and gave us another one, Bites the Dust, that we opened up here with Jonathan Groff on lead vocals. I, for one, am going to miss the crap out of Jonathan Groff next year, because I really think he has the strongest male voice on this show, even better than Matthew Morrison, in my opinion. And I think it's going to be kind of depressing to go back to...
Hold on, is Jesse, like, confirmed not to be back at all next season?
That was my next question.
You know, so I don't want to go ahead and make that, but I'm just saying he is supposed to graduate. Like, he is a senior.
Yeah, true. But... And he's in another school.
That's also true.
I don't even care. Whatever.
Didn't New Directions once keep somebody back for like 7 years? Keep
Vocal Adrenaline did.
Yeah, Vocal Adrenaline.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
You know, I love Vocal Adrenaline's numbers. Maybe it's the lack of them or their elaborate dance sequences, but I find every Vocal Adrenaline performance to be both captivating and well done. So, I don't know.
Well, they're fantastic, and you're right. I mean, because we have fewer of them, there's fewer to kind of find problems with.
And also, when they do their numbers, they're full sets. It's a full production. It's not starting in the choir rooms, practicing out, and then all of a sudden they turn around, they're in full costume and full, you know, choreography.
Yeah.
They're actual full production numbers, so
yeah,
they really are fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you were to only watch the last number of the show from New Directions, you would be like, all of New Directions numbers are big and complete and exciting. But you're saying,
like,
except
all four
one
of them, like Rehab, Mercy, Highway to Hell, and Another One Bites Dust, all are classic, and for that reason Vocal Adrenaline deserves to destroy McKinley High.
Okay, destroy is a bit harsh. I don't know if I need to destroy that.
Destroy is a little bit strong, but it's not that much stronger than how I feel.
But they're soulless.
Yes, they're soulless.
No, that makes them so much better. But you know what just makes sense to me about that? Because I was under the impression that both Amy Winehouse and Duffy were classified as neo-soul. So... I was like, those were the two first songs we heard from them, so they're neo-soul, which is kind of like having soul. Well, I don't understand this. I don't understand them not having a soul.
I think it's the way they perform it.
Yeah, it's
they
more
perform
in the
style. It more of a, you know, musical theater number as opposed to a soul number.
Yeah, that's definitely the thing. I would also, we can talk about this later, but I also would argue against Will's definition of funk being soul meets anger. But before we get too deep into all this, it was great to see Vocal Adrenaline back. And let's go ahead and do a quick rundown of a couple things that have come up a lot in the email before we dive in too much. We got tons of email about the last episode. You can always email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. But a couple things to bring up. This was originally supposed to be run last week with the Gaga episode run this week, which kind of explains why Jesse was not in the Gaga episode.
Okay.
Apparently they were switched out
in the Gaga episode. I noticed someone who I thought was very clearly Jesse doing the Bad Romance number with the mask on, and it definitely felt like it was like the scene was cut out. And now that I know that it was flipped around, I definitely feel like there was a scene in there that Jesse has some kind of conversation with Rachel at that moment.
So you thought he was in the Bad Romance number?
Yes, I swear they zoomed in on one of the characters, and then I saw Jesse's hair behind the red crown.
Wow.
I was like, that's Jesse, but they're just gonna ignore it.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, they definitely, I honestly feel like in either order, it's kind of an odd way to finish off a season. But yeah, that turned out to be, I guess they were capitalizing on the American Idol finale. So they wanted to have Gaga right next to the American Idol finale. Either or, you either have, Rachel's finale with Jesse or Rachel's finale with, Shelby kind of not connected, and they seem very connected to me, but either way they were separated out into separate episodes. It just felt awkward.
Yeah, I mean, the finale with her and Jesse, it just, I'm not understanding his anger toward him. Like, there's nothing that she did to him.
Yeah.
If he's still bitter about the whole video thing with Puck and Finn and everything, it just doesn't justify the anger and the meanness.
Well, let's swing right into that. Like, let's go ahead and dive right in. So we had New Directions came for their funkification of, or I'm sorry, Vocal Adrenaline came to funkify New Directions and thus put them into such a funk that they go into a deep depression, which they did. And then we had Jesse breaking up with Rachel. And yeah, I didn't really understand what Jesse was so angry about. You know, at the end, when they all threw eggs at Rachel, the fakest looking eggs in the history of television, but still, it was some kind of like lemon custard filled in those eggs. And then she said, go ahead, you know, when he had the last egg and she said, go ahead and do it, break it like you did my heart. And he says, I loved you. And then he still hits her with the egg. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I was really confused.
After the second viewing of it or the third viewing, I just thought maybe this is Shelby's doing. Maybe, because there were moments in his face where it was obviously hard for him to do this stuff. And so all I can think is, you know, maybe he doesn't want to, but, you know, Shelby was like, okay, enough. Hmm. Get away from her. You're coming back to the team. You're going to destroy her like we originally wanted, and that's it.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, if these two episodes were switched, if this was switched with the Gaga episode, and there was kind of a quick moment to explain that, That actually would have made a lot of sense. I mean, it would fill in the blank for me. Ed, how did you feel about this? Did you know what Jesse was talking about when he said you broke my heart or I loved you?
I don't know. I mean, Jesse cited his main reasons for leaving William McKinley High as they like he no one listened to his vastly superior idea.
That was a great line. And
so, But I don't even know. I don't even understand that as an issue because he wasn't there enough to even be heard. So this show's all fantasy right now. Like this is like one of those. This is one of those things that they really don't want us to think about. We're just supposed to like graze over it. Like we always knew that he was gonna break her heart.
Yeah.
And he was gonna fall in love with her. We kind of already. We knew that the second he sang "Highway to Hell," and then
exactly.
Fell in love. Like it was just the signs were there. So. Just because it didn't play out doesn't mean it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like, we knew it from hello.
You're just supposed to know. Like, this is just supposed to be okay with you.
Well, you make a good point. Like, I'd actually said in an email to a listener earlier this week that this was a good episode. A lot of good stuff happened. It was, you know, it's dense. I mean, when I actually had to take notes so that I could remember everything. Yeah, Jennifer took notes too. It's a really dense episode. At the same time, I kind of felt that this episode was also kind of the cleanup crew coming in to button up all of the loose ends before we get to the finale. So all we really have to deal with in the finale is, you know, whether or not Quinn's going to have the baby, which I've heard rumors, but I don't actually, you know, there hasn't been any.
She's having the baby.
Well, she's having the baby. There's no question about that.
But in the next episode. Exactly.
Okay,
so
sorry.
That's what I meant.
Yeah,
so,
like it all boils down to the next week's episode. It all boils down to the baby drama, and it boils down to the
who's going to win.
Who's going to win? But I've held to this since the beginning. William McKinley High will not win regionals because. All Principal Thingin said was you need to place in regionals.
Yeah.
Now, Does place mean first, second, third? Is that what that
I
means?
I think so.
I think that's what that means.
I think that's a safe bet.
But I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, yeah, essentially all this episode did for me, it was fun to watch. There were some great numbers, but at the same time, it was really just them kind of going in and being like, all right, let's button up Terry real quick. Let's button up Shelby and Jesse and, you know, and button up kind of like Quinn's living situation, which is the most, kind of fluid plot on this show. She's constantly moving. She must not own that much crap. And then so all we have to worry about is, you know, where's the baby going to go and who's going to win regionals. So in that way, the episode kind of bugged me. It was a little too tidy.
I think there are still more questions because, I mean, there's, you know, what about Rachel and Finn and...
Yeah.
There's tons of stuff that could be picked up, but it doesn't need to be addressed. Like,
yeah.
We could delve into another Tina Arty episode, but we don't need to. Like, there's no dying need for it right now.
No. It's just one that's kind of been still hanging on out there. And I'm just saying, well, okay, so you feel like this is a little too neat to make next week's episode a little too...
This was just a little too, it was kind of disjointed. Like, yes, there was this whole concept of everyone getting out of their funk, but at the same time, like, the plots didn't really assist one another, you know? A lot of it was like, all right, we need an excuse to get some Terry into the episode so that we can close out the marriage, so we're gonna go ahead and have the boys, slash the tires. We need to take care of Quinn's living situation, so we'll just throw in this thing about Mercedes. And it was a bit too kind of just too geared towards cleaning things up rather than actually like telling a cohesive story.
They were probably writing this like they're very defensive writers. Like it feels like they're always writing like if tomorrow they were told you're done, this is over.
Oh yeah.
it always feels like that way with their writing style. Like in the first 13 and in the last 9 they're like, what if they tell us this is it? We need to be ready for that. we don't want to be caught without
Babylon 5. Exactly.
Well, they also, I will give them points that for a cult show, lots of times cult shows don't want to come to terms with the fact that they have crazy rabid fans that are going to spend an hour recording a podcast to discuss a 43-minute show. And
who does that?
Crazy people. But a lot of shows don't want to admit that. And I really get the sense that like Glee is totally recognizes the fact that people are going to obsess about every detail. So they have to at least put a little thought into every detail. And I give them a lot of credit for that. I mean, I do think that there's very little stuff that happened. There's very few things that happen on Glee kind of by accident. And that's cool. You know, that takes a lot of forethought and a lot of work. So we had the funkification that happened in this episode. Eventually, New Directions tried to get back with their first attempt to get back against the funkification, which included slashing the tires, which I thought was kind of oddly out of character and unnecessary.
Yeah, it seemed a bit extreme, but I think it also just was kind of... It gave another chance to have Shelby there. It gave another chance to reinforce what an institution...
Carmel High is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
said let's...
They can gift their kids.
I love their cars. I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, that's so sweet. I want plates like Folk Adrenaline 1, 2, 3.
Seriously.
Mr. Schuster said, well, why don't you go steal their mascot? And Kurt says, their mascot is a shark eating a seal pup.
It weighs 3 tons. 3 tons.
I know. But the image of a shark eating a seal pup is so...
I also love that's that so Principal cruel. Figgins has a total crush on Shelby Corcoran for no reason.
Well, she's gorgeous.
Well, yes, but it was, I'm sorry.
It was, yeah.
It was kind of random. We actually had a listener who said, here are my favorite quotes from the episode, and they're all Sue quotes. Because Sue had a great speech in that scene about...
There wasn't a lot. I felt like there really wasn't that much Sue, but there was great Sue moments, even though there wasn't much.
That's what they said about a young man in Chicago in 1871 who thought he'd play a harmless prank on a dairy cow of one of Miss O'Leary. He successfully ignited his flatulence, and the city burned, William. That young terrorist went on to become the first gay president of the United States. Abraham Lincoln. Like, where does that even come from?
Yeah, that comes from the mind of Sue.
We also had, after the vocal adrenaline kids threw eggs at Rachel, and then again the Glee Club New Directions was going to try to get back at them, their reasoning being, as Kurt said, Rachel is one of us. Only us can humiliate her.
I know.
Or only we can humiliate her.
It was so good. It was so, like, brotherly love from, like, Kurt was ready to punch a witch for real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and it was so funny because I thought it was so cute that when, you know, Puck stands up and he's like, come on, and he's like, Mike, Matt, Finn, and I think and one of the first, but then
Kurt and Artie showed up anyway.
They jump up anyhow. I was like, that's so great.
And actually, I watched it the third time I watched it. I noticed in the background, you can actually see Mercedes get up too. And then when Mr. Schuster says, all right, everybody go sit down, Kurt just immediately turns back to his chair. Oh, good. I didn't want to have to do that.
Yes.
So that's pretty much all I've got for vocal adrenaline this episode. Ed, do you have anything more about vocal adrenaline?
Vocal adrenaline is amazing and deserves to destroy William McKinley.
All right.
That is all. That is all.
Well, part of Puck and Finn's punishment for slashing all of the cars on the Range Rovers, they had to replace those tires. And part of replacing the tires meant they had to get a job at Sheets and Things. So we had the triumphant return of Sheets and Things.
Oh, Terry.
And Terry. So let's go ahead and listen to Loser. That was their cover of Beck's song. I get the sense that the show was trying to kind of play this off as a funk song, but really very few of the songs in this episode were actually funk songs,
right,
by the definition.
But they're even self-aware with that, because when Finn and Puck and Mercedes did that funk song,
yes,
they're like,
they did Good Vibrations.
Just because it has funk in the name doesn't mean it's funky.
Yeah.
Well, here's, like, they're self-aware. They know what they're doing.
Here's a bit of Loser from like 93. Dog food stalls with the beefcake pantyhose. Kill the headlights and put it in neutral. Stock car flaming with the loser and the cruise control. Babies in Reno with the vitamin D. Got a couple of couches, sleep on the love seat. Someone came saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding in a stain on my shirt. Don't believe everything that you breathe. You got a parking violation and a maggot on your sleeve. So shave your face with some mace in the dark. Saving all your food stamps and burning down the trailer park. Yo. This was, was this the first time we got rapping from a character other than, I guess, Will and Artie have done rapping in the past?
Yeah, maybe.
I do think this is the first time we've had Puck and Finn rap.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun to get a different side of them.
Now, okay, so I know that you said that this wasn't technically a funk song, but, like, in this case, I was interpreting it as funk, the emotion, not funk, the musical theme. So I know, you know, I know that they were playing on the word quite a bit, so mm-hmm. That's why, in this instance, I didn't think it was that inappropriate.
Well, we can go ahead, like, let's just talk about this now. So I don't know what the definition of funk is to you guys, but, like, as a fan of funk music, to me the whole concept of funk was like, all right, you know, in the late 60s they took all the kind of African American sounds, soul, rhythm and blues, you know, blues, and then made it dance music. And not like specifically dance music, but not like they were trying to make like techno or something, but essentially it was just like lyrical content was less important and it was all about the groove, you know. It was mm-hmm. about like simplicity and the groove, and like James Brown would do entire songs with like 10 words. He'd just repeat those 10 words over and over and over again. It was all about the groove. And that's why, like, when you get to the end of the episode when they do Give Up the Funk, like, there's one line in that entire song is like, give up the funk, got to have that funk, you know, and just say it over and over again. But it's awesome because it just like rolls,
yeah,
and it just goes. And so stuff like this where I'm going, it's there's too much talking in this song for it to be a funk song. And the whole concept of soul meets anger, like I kind of get it. But to me, it's like soul meets, you know, your feet. You know, it's like soul meets a groove. And mm-hmm. that's where the funk kicked in. So I actually had a problem with this whole, like, you know, that the episode was called Funk with so little actual funk.
Yeah. But again, I think it was just such a play on, you know, the music, the mental state and the emotional state. So, yeah, I think they took quite a few liberties there.
Well, we also had a listener who emailed in to say, let's see, where we go. Listener Christine, who actually counted the number of times the word funk was used in the episode. Apparently it was said 21 times, or some variation and conjugation of the word 7 times.
Wow.
So, yeah, her comment was, we get the point. Like, there is a funk. You're going to use funk to get out of your funk. Come up with a new word. Ed, how great was it to have Terry back this week?
It was pretty great. I love Terry, and I love that she admitted, she's like, I have a thing with crushing people's dreams. Terry, crush away.
She said, I have this compulsive need to crush people's dreams.
Yeah,
so good.
And then I really loved when they were after Loser, they panned to Puck like air playing guitar, and I was like, oh, that's so funny.
On the brim, like, that later you see broken in Howard's hands,
yes,
for some reason.
For some reason.
Yeah. I wonder what transpired.
I wonder if somebody broke it in the dance number for Loser.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember.
I just figure Puck using it on Howard, and Howard just pathetically walking back with two pieces.
Were you saying there, Ed, something? Ed, did we forget? Did we interrupt you?
No, I was just breathing.
Well, we also got Sandy in that scene.
Oh, Sandy, what up?
Yes.
Sandy is always great. I think I love the fact that Howard's like, I'm sick of dealing with him. You deal with him. You want pink? This isn't pink.
Yes, he said I'm doing a Jane Mansfield styled bathroom, and they just looked at him blankly, and he goes, pink, and he's buying a cat shaped toilet brush holder.
God,
which is one of those things that like no one should own. Like, you see it on the shelf at Bed Bath & Beyond and you go, who would buy that?
Sandy Ryerson would. Okay, you know what? Okay, I'm always defending this show about its continuity, because even though it seems like they have no continuity, they normally do. Like 99% of the time they do. But this is the one time that they don't is Finn got a job, and there has been no offhanded quip about him quitting or getting fired or anything. There was nothing about that. He got a job when he was in a wheelchair, and Rachel's like my gay dad's blah 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 blah. So he got a job, but they never like, if there was even a quarter of a line or even like any little bit, I would totally say continuity. It's totally there, but there was none. There was nothing there to say that he quit.
No, you make a really good point. It was like episode 4 that he got that job, and they haven't mentioned it since.
Or 11, but yeah.
Was it 11? Wow, I'm impressed.
I just rewatched the first 13.
Okay.
So oh, good.
But yeah, you know, you make a really good point. It was kind of odd that he was there. I don't know. The whole thing was kind of funky. Huh?
Oh, wow. Play the funky music.
Sandy had a great line. Where's my music? I can't shop without my Kenny G. That was a classic. And then Howard made the comment, that guy who gave me Bell's palsy is back again today.
Yeah.
Which I laughed really hard because we had a friend who got Bell's palsy.
I don't even know.
It's actually a
neurological condition that causes slight paralysis on one side of your face.
Yeah, like essentially the right side of her face just went paralyzed. Yeah.
But nobody really knows exactly how it's caused. It can be viral. It can be different things. But one of the possible causes is stress. So at first I was like, oh wow, I didn't put the two together, that it was actually I didn't get it right away that it was going to be Sandy, but then I totally understood.
Yeah, it was really priceless. It was just funny to have Howard back in the mix. But eventually, I guess it looks like Terry has her sights set on Puck, like
Finn.
Thank you. That her sights were going to be set on Finn, kind of to be her new Will. She yes. said, "You can be my second chance." Even
yeah. Well, I kind of suspected something was going to be up when she was signing the divorce papers with Will. She's like, "I'll you're still that 16-year-old to me."
Exactly.
And then you know. And then when I saw those
here,
two guys...
Here comes a 16-year-old, right yeah, for the picking.
Exactly. Yep. Then when the two of them were standing in front of her at linens... Or, sorry.
Sheets and things.
Sheets and things. I don't know what that other place is. Actually, it doesn't exist anymore. At least not out here. I figured it was going to be one of them.
Yeah.
So, of course, well, she goes for the sweeter, more...
Well, it's also funny that she kind of prefers stupid people. Like, you know, at the end of the day, Mr. Schuster's not the quickest guy on
the block. He didn't know she wasn't pregnant.
Exactly. But then she makes that horrible line she says to Puck after she turns the music down, "I thought Jews were supposed to be smart." Yeah. Just like, only, like, I feel guilty just reciting that, even though yeah. I was just quoting a line. Do you think, Ed, that we're going to get more of this Finn Terry relationship?
Yeah, like, well, normally things, I feel like things just build up to be kind of settled lamely in some ways, but since it wasn't dealt with that episode, it's going to be settled on a, like, they'll Glee has it has at least tried to settle everything, so if yeah. they're going to settle this, it's just they're just going to do it later.
Yeah, I could never see it being two-sided, though.
Oh, that would be weird.
I mean, he even said himself, you know, you'd be a total MILF if it weren't for the whole fake baby thing.
That's a great
and
line.
And he already fell for the fake baby thing once. Or,
yeah. And she thanked him. That was yeah. the best part about that.
She took it as a compliment.
She's very delusional that way.
Well, as long as we're on the topic of Kurt, or as long as we're on the topic of Finn, we had a lot of emailers that weighed in on the Kurt-Finn conversation that we had last week that I wanted to at least touch on for a second. And apparently this was a big discussion on Television Without Pity. The whole, like, exchange between Kurt and Finn, and people kind of debating, like, who was in the right, in a way. And also kind of, I don't want to say justifying, but just kind of discussing the inclinations. You know, one of our one listener emailed in, and I'm trying to find it now, but one listener emailed in just to kind of say, like, Finn's under a ton of stress right now, and he almost doesn't get enough credit for the amount of stress he's under, you know, being in Glee, having to deal with the perceptions of people, thinking he got Quinn pregnant, his parent, you know, his mother, and dealing with the loss of his father, and then he finally kind of explodes and just gets a rain of crap down upon him and really, you know, not a lot of patience in that situation. You know, it's an interesting topic just to kind of, it's hard to kind of discuss that in the context of a TV show where people go through a drama every week and they're supposed to resolve that drama within a suitable amount of time.
42 minutes.
But also, you know, kind of the interesting conversation I've heard from a couple listeners is if Finn was pursuing Rachel in as, like, full court press a fashion as Kurt is pursuing Finn, we'd be calling it sexual harassment. Like, we'd be really kind of bluntly saying, you know, that's inappropriate, let alone if, you know, Finn and Rachel's parents moved in together and then they were forced to share a room. We would just kind of call that insane. But because of the situation and Kurt being young, we're kind of feeling a different thing about it. I don't know. I wanted to throw it out to you guys because I've discussed it with a couple listeners and I don't really know how I feel about it either way. Ed, do you have an opinion on all that stuff?
Well, I mean, I think Kurt didn't actually do anything, technically.
Well, yeah, but his intentions are plainly obvious.
Intentions don't mean anything if you don't actually do anything.
Okay, I mean, I guess that's valid, but I mean, I do, but then I kind of feel like Kurt needed to give Finn, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you try to take the show as real, Kurt's what, 15? So mm-hmm. you've got to forgive him a little bit of overreaction, but then yeah, it was...
In the end, Kurt was trying to make it work. Like, he might have been going about it the wrong way, but he was trying to make it work. He was trying to, even though he felt like he was making a sacrifice in his style to make it more Finn-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
But even though Finn doesn't feel that way, but I can definitely feel like Kurt felt like he was meet me halfway, but Finn felt like he wasn't even trying at all. So, I mean, it's kind of not right in some ways. I don't know.
Yeah, in addition to going along with that, I guess I kind of got the impression that Kurt got a little misguided in all of his enthusiasm to be this close. And yeah, he knows that it would never work out. He knows that, you know, it would never happen between them. But, he still got such joy out of the prospect of sharing their lives together. And even as, you know, brothers or roommates or friends. But, it's really hard because I don't know that, like, I don't want to, I have a hard time saying that either one was wrong. I think they both kind of reacted not the best way possible for the situation. And I think, again, you know, the way I felt when we initially watched it is it seemed very honest. It was, you know, they're both kind of very flawed in the situation, but it seemed honest. And the fact is that, you know, they're able to grow from it, not, you know, just be that one person in that one moment. They've evolved. So, I think maybe Finn did get a little bit too much of a bad rap for it, but I think that he handled it as best as he could.
Yeah, you know, I think that because it is a TV show, you kind of have to take a step back. And I think that at the end of the day, the show is coming down pretty firmly on Kurt's side. Mm-hmm. And the show is really trying to make the point that, you know, that you know, Kurt is a good person, and that, you know, homophobia is wrong, and that's really the point that the show is trying to make. And I think that kind of the fervor on the internet is people kind of wanting to see Kurt be held accountable for his behavior as much as Finn is being held accountable for his. Kind of the whole, like, they're both in the wrong.
Right.
Which I agree with, but I think at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to what is the message the show is trying to give. And in this particular case, the message the show is trying to put across is kind of a conversation about homophobia and about acceptance of who people are. And so, yeah, it is kind of an interesting thought exercise to say, what if this was Finn and Rachel in the same situation? But I just don't think it plays. You know, I don't think that at the end of the day, that's a valid argument.
No, because
I believe in like 30 years' time, in retrospect, Glee will have made decided movements for popular consensus on gay rights and gay, like, just homophobia in general. Like, I think in 30 years' time, we're going to look back and be like, this was a sort of turning point.
Oh, very groundbreaking, yeah.
In American culture.
Now, just to play devil's advocate with you, though, this is funny because we usually don't have this type of a serious conversation on the show. To play devil's advocate with you, though, because of the nature of the show being what it is, and the fact that it's on Fox, and, you know, the the viewers, like the age group that it taps into, there's a part of me that thinks it's almost preaching to the choir. That's not always
That's true too. Everyone who watches the show is probably, if nothing else, gay tolerant.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess that's the point I'm making. Yeah. But it does introduce the conversation into the public consciousness. And at the end of the day, conversation is the most important thing. You know,
Since it's being brought up as the more ways these things can be brought up, I would argue the better. Like, even though everyone I'm totally on your side on this. People who watch the show are probably not homophobes, most likely, but
it is running against CSI, so that's mean.
I was just reading on that they're going to be introducing a very strong Christian character next season.
Because
Ryan Murphy said they've taken a lot of jabs against the right wing, and they felt like, in all fairness, there should be someone representing that side as well. So
And that's, you know, that's to be commended. Like, I think that that'll be cool. And unless that character just becomes kind of a comedic punching bag, that can really create
some... I doubt it. I think Ryan Murphy has more tact than that.
Well, and I think the show up to this point has at least shown a bit more honesty. I mean, you know, just
with all the characters, I've said this time and time again, they always show good and bad sides of every character.
Yeah.
Oh, like, totally.
It's real. Like, I imagine we'll see some bad aspects out of this heavily Christian character. But that being said, there'll probably be some very good aspects as well. So it's just real, and then real people have real problems and have real solutions. Like, I don't, like, that's just it.
Yeah, I think a great example was in the Brian Ryan, you know, Dream On episode, when Brian Ryan made a case for arts in schools, and then Sue came right back with a case, a totally valid case for sports in schools. And it would be really easy for this show to just entirely fall on one side because it kind of fits, you know, the story of a Glee Club. But it was honest enough to be like, hey, there's another side to this conversation too that needs to be, you know, made honestly. Well, let's go ahead and listen to Good Vibrations after that reasonably heavy conversation. Listen to something that's kind of silly and fun. This is Good Vibrations as performed by Puck Finn and Mercedes. This was originally a song recorded by Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. And for the younger listeners, Marky Mark grew up to be Mark Wahlberg. And if you haven't seen this music video, it's hilarious. So definitely go check that out on the YouTubes.
Two, three. Now we come to the page.
Actually, even though this song came out when I was in junior high, so it was kind of like right in the time when I would have been a fan, I hated hip hop at the time, and I found this to just be a really boring, repetitive, or a really boring rehash of CNC Music Factory, which I actually kind of against all odds really liked. But I had no idea how much of the song was just anti-drugs. Like, if you actually listen to the lyrics, he's constantly talking like I'm wealthy with friendships or something. It's really goofy. You must know this song, Ed. This must be before your time, but you're pretty hip to this type of stuff.
I know of the song, like, as a passive knowledge, but I didn't ever actively pursue it. So.
Well, we should definitely spend some time talking about Mr. Schuster and Sue Sylvester in this episode. Mr. Schuster's plan to get Sue Sylvester off of his back. Those two names are really hard to say right next to each other. Mr. Schuster and Sue Sylvester.
How about Will and Shoe?
Will and Shoe. That'll work.
I said Shoe.
Yeah, that's not right.
Will and Sue.
Will and Sue. So Will's plan to get Sue off of his back this week was to essentially seduce her. It started by performing Tell Me Something Good that we'll take a listen to in just a little bit. But the seduction apparently worked, and Sue kind of fell for Will in a very odd way. And they had a date at Breadsticks where she wore her tracksuit and pearls.
Yes.
One of my favorite things I've seen all season. And he eventually stood her up. It was kind of weird to see Mr. Schuster be so mean.
Yeah.
Like, he's been angry.
He's been angry.
But he's never been straight out conniving before.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to watch. And again, I think he got a little confused or overenthusiastic about bringing her down. But it was so out of character because she even said herself, I'm mean to everybody.
Yeah.
And he was just deliberately playing with her heart And I'm surprised she fell for it as quickly as she did.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was a bit out of character. And I mean, but obviously quickly he learned, you know, that that wasn't going to solve anything and that, you know, what he did was just unnecessarily cruel.
Yeah, he definitely had a turnaround, as Will Schuster always does. Ed, what did you think?
It might have been a turnaround, but the fact is, this is the first time in a post-Terry era for Will that I actually found him mildly amusing. So
he kind of held his own this episode, you mean?
Yeah, I was like, go Will.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was telling someone the other day, like, I have a thing for bitches. And I have even a bigger thing for even bigger bitches at other bitches. So it's just like,
bitch fights are your like. Bitch fights.
Did I just like bleep like 20 times?
No, oh, well, whatever. It's fine.
Whatever.
Sorry. You can say that show on Prime.
Younger listeners.
Yeah. You can say that word on basic cable.
Oh
on,
yeah.
On
PG-13. This is PG-13, right?
There you go. So you said that this was actually a fun Will for you? Like, this was kind of more interesting
than
watching
normal? Well, I don't know. The word fun is not the word I would use. I would use interesting. And you know what? It was somewhat satisfying to give Sue a little bit of her own medicine. I mean, he wasn't the best apothecary, but it was at least somewhat... She felt the pain. And anything that lets us see her house is hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was awesome. The trophy house?
To me, trophies are like herpes. No matter what you do, they're going to keep coming back.
Yeah. And she's going to be the only cheerleading coach that has a housekeeper.
Yes.
Especially in Ohio.
But six national titles. She's like the Michael Jackson of cheerleading.
And a listener actually emailed in like all of the different types of trophies that she included in her place. Listener Logan had said they also saw tennis trophies, bowling trophies, and a couple more that he couldn't even recognize what the figurine on top was.
Wow. I'll have to go rewatch that scene again. It was pretty good. I mean, I think just the whole exchange between the two of them when she's lying in bed and he's like, I was wrong to think that attacking you personally was going to make me feel better. And she said, you know, they need you. You know, you have love in your life. And she's like, they fear me. And he said, yeah, but you love them. And then she just kind of had that sort of knowing, somewhat grin. And it was a really sweet moment. So, yeah, very misguided. But she does care. So I was glad to see them come back to that.
It was funny to see the Cheerios all like disheveled after.
Oh my God.
It was so good.
Oh. Like there was a quote earlier in the season that was like, fear is like a mother's milk to these children. And after that, it's like, it kind of felt that way. I was like, whoa, they're like destroyed.
Oh my God. Brittany was hysterical. Her hair, her uniform.
Yeah. Her uniform was on backwards and her hair, yeah. Like the bangs were twisted the wrong direction. And she was chasing after the Jewish kids saying, love me,
please,
love me,
please love me.
Yeah, that was really funny. And Kurt said, I'm okay because I have Glee.
Yeah. but so does in Santana and Britain. Well, but that's
different,
more. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, I guess
you're
that's
right,
different.
You're right.
Now, a couple of listeners.
They don't
Ed,
have solos yet, so it doesn't count.
Well, yeah. And a couple of listeners have emailed in to say that watching Sue develop as a person is making her less interesting to watch and less threatening in the moment. Do you feel that way?
Somewhat. I would agree. But I feel like humanizing Sue is important because she can't just be evil without anything to back it up.
Yeah.
You have to have something to back it up. Otherwise, got a big ego. Okay. Beyonce, get out of my head. So, it was really nice. I think it's good. Like, she's not as interesting when she's being human, but it's necessary. Because if it wasn't there, it would be evil without motivation.
Yeah.
And,
we'd check out
on her. You can't be pure evil if you're not motivated.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, she really cares about her kids and she'll do anything at any cost. And yeah, she gets, you know, the glory for it and tons of trophies. So
It's true.
It's okay.
We, listener Lauren sent in some great quotes from Sue. Sue had some of her best lines so far in this episode. Even your breath stinks of mediocrity was genius. Dear Journal, when she was doing the whole Dear Journal thing, she says, something strange happened today. I felt something below the neck.
Yes. Then sexy, she said, non-murdering feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that.
She said, isn't that the way it always is? True love springs from true hate.
Yeah.
And then she finished it off with, I'll admit in the past I fantasize about waking up with Will's head on the pillow next to me, except now I pictured it attached to the rest of his body.
That's awesome.
I even wrote down a couple of my own. The whole thing about the illegal hot Cheetos ring.
Oh my God.
Apparently hot Cheetos release endorphins that make children happy, and she's like, I can't have that. And then my personal favorite, I don't know why, but my favorite was for those attention Glee Clubbers, for those of you whose hearing has not been ruined by massive amounts of Accutane.
That's mean.
She was just evil, this one. Yeah. This episode was actually written by Ian Brennan, who wrote the original film that the show was that was kind of based on, was created by, or created from. Which is funny, because his episodes are usually like this, where they're a bit hodgepodgey. They don't quite hold up. Mm-hmm. But he does apparently really know how to nail Sue's dialogue. So let's go ahead and listen to the song that Will performed for Sue in an attempt to seduce her. It was entitled Tell Me Something Good. I love at the end of this number when he said, so what do you think, Sue? Was it too dirty? And she goes, I don't know.
Oh, I love the bend and snap, Ben.
What?
Snap. Bend and snap. When he dropped the paper.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really blonde. Hello.
Yeah.
The booty.
She says, I didn't notice. I was bored.
Yeah.
Oh, and he had a good one too, where he says, the only thing I want is Sue.
Yes.
So here's Matthew Morrison with Tell Me Something Good.
You refuse to put anything before your pride. What I got will knock all your pride aside. Something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah. Tell me something good. Tell me that you like it.
So eventually Sue did win nationals. She said before nationals, she always gets a placenta mask, which is odd. And she won nationals with, you guys said it, a 12-minute Celine Dion medley in French.
Yes.
Oh, Kurt. And when Kurt was interviewed, he responded in French. Oh, yeah. I love Kurt. You're getting married in the fall.
That was fantastic.
The leg kick, the high kick was awesome.
So I guess that's pretty much it for Sue and Will. And then we can go ahead and wrap up. I guess the last big plot of the episode was Quinn and Mercedes. Quinn kind of coming to terms with her previous behavior. I guess that's kind of the theme of Quinn this season, coming to terms with the person she used to be and moving on in some way. Though we have had some listeners positing that she could go back to the Quinn that she used to be in next season.
I'm counting on it, actually.
Ed, you're probably cheering for that, I would think.
Yeah, I was watching, as I was rewatching the first 13, I was like, oh, I love Quinn.
Evil Quinn. Now.
What happened? Yes. Oh, the baby.
Her bastard child. She's just going to blame. Don't blame the kid.
Yeah, that's the reason she's not as interesting anymore. It really is.
And it's her hormones and her maternal instinct coming out.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely true. She's been bonding with Mercedes the last couple episodes, and
I don't really understand Mercedes like dissing of Quinn. I'm like, that is out of character. What are you doing?
That is, well, it's not entirely out of character.
It isn't entirely out of character, but it still felt awkward the way it happened.
Mercedes has always weighed pretty heavy on the like strong black woman thing. And so it didn't feel out of character to me so much. I mean, Mercedes has always kind of had this, like, you know, like, I'm black and that makes me funky and that makes me a good dancer. You know, the whole, like, I'm not Beyonce, I'm Beyonce, I'm not Kelly Rowland's line.
Yeah, but also, I think Mercedes' biggest objection was the fact that Quinn thought that she could identify with her in discrimination. I mean, that's the beef that I thought Mercedes had. Like, how dare you, you know, you pretty well-off white girl come in here and tell me you're gonna, you know what funk, you know what oppression and discrimination is? And I think that was her initial reaction. And then, you know, maybe afterwards she started to understand her pain.
Well, I think that it seemed like Mercedes got there, but at first her thing was like, when white people do funk, it turns out like Casey and the Sunshine Band, and she kind of scoffed at her.
Right.
And, which I kind of, I actually liked Quinn's response to that, where she said, Mercedes, racism aside, it's pretty rare that a show is ballsy enough to call like a minority racist in kind of a reverse racism situation. But Quinn does have one of the silliest lines of the episode where she says, I want a chance to get funky too. I'm like, that's a pretty goofy way to I know what you're getting at, but it's a pretty goofy way to say that.
Again, I think that was just an excuse to use the word funk.
Yeah, that's true. They just tried to get it in more times in the episode. So eventually, Mercedes invited Quinn to come live with her, which really felt like it came all the way out of left field. I mean, I don't know. Like, Ed, what did you think? Did that come out of left field to you too?
Well, we haven't had lots of Quinn lately, so it isn't like, it isn't entirely out of left field. We needed some Quinn action. As we were saying last week, we're like, as it seemed like, well, we haven't seen enough Tina Arty, we get that. We haven't seen enough Santana, we get Santana. We haven't seen enough Quinn, now we're getting Quinn. So it's nice. It was nice. It wasn't unexpected because of that. And, you know, I think it was justified in the description that Will Schuster gave. Like, she has soul. She's got anger. And you know what? She's going to bring it.
That's true. I mean, she did end up doing the man's world number. It's a man's, 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 man's world. No, it's a man's, man's, man's world. And it's three of them. You know, I'm a purist. And so, James Brand fan. I want to make sure I get it right.
I know. Bran?
What?
Bran? James Bran?
Seriously.
Brown.
But I thought that was a cool number. And you're right, Ed. I mean, she did bring some of that anger to that. And you know, we haven't had a Quinn solo in a while.
Since
You Keep Me Hanging On is the last one I recall. And that was quite some time ago.
Yeah.
No, she had another one. Did she have another one?
Well, I mean, she kind of had a solo in episode two with
the most recent one was Let's Say a Little Prayer. No,
yeah.
Her most recent solo, she had, I can only think of three solos from her prior to this one.
Okay.
Say a Little Prayer, You Keep Me Hanging On, and Papa Don't Preach. I can't think of
anything
else.
Oh, that's right, Papa Don't Preach. So
but that was
point.
Not during the Madonna episode. That was during the babysitting episode.
Yeah, totally.
So
I think so. It's about time for another Quint solo.
It was good to see her perform. Let's see. I have to give a listener, Kate from Cleveland, the award for best email of the week, when she said, an obvious one is that while Quinn is giving labor, the group needs to sing Push It by Salt-N-Pepa.
Nice. So, very nice.
But yeah, you know, there's not a lot to say about Quinn. She's definitely the most spry pregnant woman I've ever seen in my life. Her dance moves during the closing number, and then her work on It's a Man's, Man's, Man's World, where she performed with the Unwed Mothership Connection.
Yes.
Which, as a P-Funk fan, that was totally geektastic reference. but yeah, that's pretty much it with those guys. Is there anything else to say about Quinn and Mercedes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not too surprised because they have had, over the last couple of weeks, several moments where they've been connecting and obviously, you know, the whole thing with Puck is going to be weird. So I understand they need to get Quinn out of Puck's house before she has the baby, you know, so that there's no question there. Like, I think it's like the first step in distancing the connection of father and child. That's the way I took it. And then I thought this number was great, except for the dancing bellies. To me, that sort of cheapened the impact of the song, because I thought she did a beautiful job, and if it was just her, it would have been incredible. I just, the dancing pregnant bellies were really distracting to me. Oh, you're starting it over?
I'm going to start it over, because I totally agree, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just forgetting. I totally agree that the song was really good, and it's not the best version I've ever heard, and it's not, you know, the most soulful version ever, but she had a lot of emotion, and she sounded really good, and I thought it was just ballsy that Diana Agron was willing to just, like, go as far as she did with that.
And sing James Brown, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really great.
That was cool. But you're absolutely right. I thought that the dancers kind of made it token, kind of made it goofy.
It gave this sort of, I'm sure they were going for some levity or some comedic value. And initially, maybe that was okay. But then when all you saw were these, you know, bellies, you know, swinging in motion and choreographed together, it took away from the impact of the song and everything that, you know, she was trying to convey when she's, you know, trying to show her funk.
I'm also thinking that every listener of ours who's been pregnant is saying, I was not that spry. Most of the ones I've known were not that flexible.
They have a hard enough time standing up, let alone dancing. But, yeah, so that was my two cents on that.
Ed, what did you feel about that? Did you think that the unwed mother connection, mothership connection was appropriate? Edward?
It seems silly and unnecessary now, but I believe in retrospect, it will become like a classic Quinn moment. Hmm. So it was kind of, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, I wish she had more of her own moment. That's all.
I mean, but it was so obvious that all the bellies were fake bellies.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of like poking fun at it itself. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you that. They're definitely not, they weren't the most convincing. So let's go ahead and listen to that performance. It's A Man's 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 World with Diana Agron on lead vocals. And yeah, it's a great James Brown song. Can't miss that.
This is a man's world, but it would mean nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl. You see, man made the cars to take us over the road.
That's pretty much it for the episode Funk, leading us to the big finale. What, am I forgetting something?
Oh, I thought you were going to blow off the last number.
Oh, we'll get to the last number. In the end, I'm sorry. Give me that look. We finished off with Give It the Funk, which we'll close the show on, but eventually the New Directions invited over Vocal Adrenaline to discuss their one weakness as they are unable to do funk. They're unable to perform a successful funk number, and so they went ahead and performed a very funky number. And it was funny. I don't know why I thought it was funny that she said automatons.
Yeah,
instead of automatons.
Or robots or machines or something like that.
What did you think of the last number, Ed?
I will be honest, I really didn't enjoy it that much.
Really?
I felt like it didn't really I felt like it served no purpose. I mean, I guess technically it did, but that's not the type of performance that's going to win you nationals. And maybe I was just so... I felt like Kurt was so out of his element somehow that it just wasn't enjoyable for me. Like, he, like, did the opening line, and I was like, who is that voice? Oh, it's Kurt? Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, that was distracting to me, because that doesn't sound like that was actually Kurt at all.
Yeah, I kept rewatching that, and I wasn't sure. My biggest problem is that I just don't know if they should have shown their hand to Vocal Adrenaline. I don't know.
No, they totally should.
I think it's
that,
a mistake.
That was the use of the... Without that, the scene was useless.
But I understand that, but I'm thinking as far as their strategy in taking down Vocal Adrenaline, I don't think that, you know, pointing out that they know their one weakness is going to help them, because who knows, maybe they could rally and put together, you know, maybe they could try to pull off a funk number, which they've never been able to do.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was a little too transparent for them.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think that they would. I'm not thinking that they're going to do like exactly the same funk number in regionals, but
they're not even doing any. Like, I feel it's just so funny that they do all these practicing, all these routines, but when push comes to shove,
don't say what they're going
to
do. I know.
They do something completely different. I didn't say what they did. I just said they're just going to do something completely different.
Well, there you go.
But, I mean. The EP is available for pre-order, so technically everyone could already know this. But
yes.
Well, there are tons of videos out already, but again, I wait.
Yeah, I've been...
I won't watch anything until the actual episode, and then, you know, then I might go back and rewatch certain ones or see if they're different from what has actually aired.
Well, so I'll try it one more time. That's all I've got for the episode of Funk. Do you guys have anything else you want to discuss? No? All right. Well, there are a couple things that we need to hit on from last week. We'd made a comment that Brittany didn't have any lines in the episode last week. She did. She had a very funny line about Tina's outfit and how Tina could dress up as a Happy Meal with onions or a cheeseburger, no onions, or a chicken. Clarifying on that one. And but I will say that Brittany only had one line this episode where she said, I'm sorry, Mr. Schuster, as they were bringing in the trophy. And I think that's the only time she talked this week.
That and please, please love me.
Oh, and please love me. Yes, exactly. So we did not have we didn't have a truly classic Brittany line this week. We also had a conversation last week about Matt and Mike Chang's lines and whether or not that was their first. It was Matt's first line last week, but it was not Mike's first line. And actually,
Line was I can pop and lock in like episode 6 or something.
He did. He had the pop and lock line, and then someone emailed that he had another line, like one word or something in another episode, and that this was the first time Matt had spoken audibly. He had mouthed a line in a previous episode. So we had that to weigh in on. And then some other people who'd gone to the Glee tour actually said that here in LA, after Jennifer and I went, we went on a Thursday, and on a Saturday night, Jonathan Groff showed up and he and Michelle did Hello. And on closing night in New York, Sue Sylvester came out in the tracksuit and Matthew Morrison and Puck did Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So that's exciting for the people that got to see that. We did not get to see that. but if you'd like to weigh in on anything we said today, you can email us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can check out the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast, and you can become our fan on Facebook. Go ahead and check that out. And, you know, you can post on our wall and say fun things that people say on Facebook. And I want to thank all of the emailers this week. We've been getting a ton of emails, so thank you so much for that. Listener Joanna, Anissa, who sent all the great quotes we've been quoting this episode, as well as, I believe, listener Lauren also sent lots of great quotes. And I can't really list everybody, but thank you so much. Also listener Jonathan sent some quotes. I don't want to miss anybody. But and Ed, do you want to thank some iTunes reviewers?
Sure, but first, the Television Critics Awards nominees just came in, and Glee is nominated for Program of the Year, Outstanding Comedy Series,
And it's also nominated for Outstanding New Program, and Jane Lynch is also nominated for Individual Achievement in Comedy.
Wow, that's exciting. I definitely think Jane Lynch is a front runner for supporting actress at the in a musical or con whatever at the Emmys. I think that she's got to be up for that.
True. And then we have lots of iTunes reviewers.
Okay.
MJF 2001.
And they were all five star, right? I'm joking.
OM Glee, which she or he ends all their messages in "In Ed We Trust." So I definitely appreciate that. Tumancour, which I think is, I don't even know. That might be French. Faux Hawk Back, Home Skillet, Jorday 909090, T Hizzle. And I think that's it for this week. So thank you so much for reviewing us on iTunes. And
yes,
I always appreciate it, and I always read them. So continue doing so.
Awesome. And yes, I respond to every email, or I try to. So if I did not respond to you, I try to make sure that we mention your stuff, your topic on the air. So let us know what you think. For the Gleeful Podcast, I've been Josh.
I'm Jen.
Peace out, Om Glee Jazz Hands.
Good night, everyone.
Give up the fight.